Well, good morning.
Good to see everybody. We have a number of visitors in the audience. We thank you for being here. We hope that what we do here is edifying and helps you in your worship to the Lord, and that you will grow in His grace and knowledge. There's a story told, apocryphal story, about the Apostle John. You may have heard it, that he, at the end of his life, was, of course, released. We know he was exiled to Patmos during the persecution of the church by the Roman emperors, and he was released. He survived that and settled in Ephesus in his last days. He was in his 90s and he was infirmed. He couldn't walk or come to services under his own power. But they carried him in on a pallet every time that they were worshiping. And they would set him close to the front so that he could hear what was going on. And they would always ask him to speak a word. Can you imagine having an apostle of Jesus Christ in your local church service? I believe we would all say, you know, not, oh, I want to hear Chuck, or I want to hear Ross or somebody else. John, do you have something to say to us? And it is said that he always said the same thing, that he would say to them, love one another. He was weak and it was all he could say. Love one another. Love one another. We are also very different. And our real issue as we bring a family together is that we can become divided from one another. And it has happened so often among God's people. It seems like to me that even churches of Christ, particularly conservative churches of Christ, that adhere to book, chapter, and verse, that ask for authority for what we do, are more prone to do that than are some who have gone, we may say, to the more liberal side of things. That they may obviously tolerate things they should not, and therefore that may make it easier to stay together. But sometimes there's a spirit that is in more conservative brethren that I think is almost the opposite of love. That there's somewhere in there we need to combine the two. Our love for truth, our wanting to abide by the truth, but also to have great patience and long-suffering and enduring. And in short, as John the Apostle said, love one another. Let us always remember how very important that is. The word strife, as you know, is often used in the New Testament. The Apostle Paul makes it one of the works of the flesh in Galatians, the 5th chapter. William Barclay, in his great work on that section of the flesh and the spirit, the fruits of the spirit, works of the flesh, the Greek word for strife is eros. He makes this comment, no sin more commonly invades the church than eros. None is more destructive of Christian fellowship. But eros cannot even gain an entry to the church if Christ be supreme there. I want us to mark that down in our minds. If Jesus Christ is supreme in our lives, then strife and discord and division cannot enter in. You've had to suffer that here. I've had to suffer it in places that I have been at. There are sometimes unbelievable things that you cannot imagine. Could that actually cause two people that both think they're going to heaven? That's what I always wonder. Is when somehow, if we think we're both going to get to heaven, we look across over there and tap the person on the shoulder and say, did you see who made it up here? Did you see who's here? Because most likely we're not going to go. If our attitude is such that just almost the least little things get under our skin about somebody and we become divided from them. The story of Paul and Barnabas is a sad story. One to think about how much they did and accomplished for God. How Barnabas risked his neck for the Apostle Paul. Do you remember that? They bring the Apostle Paul back after he has been the great persecutor, and that's all they know in Jerusalem. They'd heard he had obeyed the gospel. But when he came back and wanted to join the disciples, they would not let him. Do you remember that? That's like somebody coming down front, as we would say, and asked to place membership at Westside, and we say to him, we don't want anything to do with you. Get out of here. And we don't have any good basis for that other than what we remember about them in their past. And so Barnabas sticks his neck out and brings him before the apostles and makes known the fact that he had obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, that he truly was a servant of the Lord. You remember in Damascus, he preached boldly in the name of Jesus, and Barnabas won over the hearts of all the people. And so that it says the apostle Paul came out and went in among them. He was accepted by them. He was allowed to be, as we would say, a member of that local fellowship. And now to see them, because of not of doctrinal issue, not of anything that has to do with a matter of this is the truth, though truth is involved in this, by the way. We never should lose that idea that John said, love one another. That Jesus said to us, love one another. That the apostle Paul and Barnabas should have thought about those things. I think there is wrong here, wrong that has to be settled before the throne of God, but there should have been unity, and there should have been understanding, and there should have been forgiveness. And I'm going to suggest some more things about that as we get into the lesson today. First of all, I want to suggest to you that there are some principles that we always ought to recognize when we become divided from somebody. And this can be over matters of truth. There obviously we must sit down with book, chapter, and verse. And sometimes you're not going to be able to resolve that because some people are going to rebel against that. We see that often in the scriptures. They just simply are not going to do what God says. But when it is an issue that we can do something about, we must do something about it. And realize the urgency to be reconciled to a brother that we has aught against us. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 23 and 24. So if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. That is a shocking verse. When you realize that what God is saying to us, before you offer at the altar, that's the worship to God. That's putting God where he ought to be. But God says, before I'll accept that, before you do that, if you remember that your brother has something against you, leave it there and go first and be reconciled to your brother. Then come and offer your gift. It matters so much to God that we be right horizontally, that he will not accept our worship vertically, unless we are right horizontally. When sometimes people try to explain to me why they are divided from someone else, why a church had to pull out of a church and start, they started another church, a group pulls out and starts another church, and nobody can give any good reason other than we got mad about something. We lost our cool about it. We thought the elders didn't make it fast enough or whatever. Does it become grounds for somebody dividing from somebody else? We need to take great care that we understand that God will not accept our worship if we remain divided from somebody. I look at the young people and I think about how young people so often can teach us something. Young people who at groups that have divided from one another still get together with each other. Still are great friends. Still are great, honoring what God would want honored. And yet their parents can't. And yet they cannot as adults be together. Cannot think about coming to somebody else's gospel meeting. Cannot, think about crossing that divide. Almost that idea that I'll make it to heaven and look across there and say, how'd you get up here? That cannot be our attitude, and it must not be our attitude. Sometimes when I've gotten in a fight with Wilna, I think about it. I try to, almost immediately anymore. Think, what if one of us died just almost immediately after the worst things have been said? What would you feel like? What would the living person feel like? Who is left and nothing could be said to this person to set the matter right again. Folks, there has to be that kind of urgency to rush and to make it right. In Ephesians, the fourth chapter, in verse 26, there is the statement made Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. Story is told one time of two brothers that were separated from one another. And finally one of them woke up and he came over to the other brother's house. And as he knocked on the door and the guy came to the door, there's one of these screen doors between them. Doors open in summer. And when he saw him on the other side of the screen, he didn't open the door. They're just staring through the screen at each other. The brother on the porch said, "You know, the sun is almost set." That's all he said. He knew his brother would know the passage. He knew his brother would know that do not let the sun go down on your wrath is a command of God. It's something that we ought to do every day if we fight with our family, if a husband and wife or whatever. Make it right before the sun goes down. That's the urgency that we are to have about the matter of reconciling. Secondly, accept the obligation, the possibility of it. And we've been saying that. Jesus doesn't think that this is going to take years to accomplish. Sometimes what I must do is go to somebody I don't want to go to and say words that need to be said of apology. Whether I am right or wrong about it sometimes is not the issue. It could be attitudes that were expressed. There are things that sometimes, folks, you just need to eat crow about. And if it means that you need to come in front of God's people and say to all of them, "I'm sorry for what has happened and this ought not to separate us," then be the one that is big enough to do that. And know that if we'll go and we'll apologize and forgive and we hug one another, and I'll tell you the most important thing is, have them over for Sunday lunch. Because the problem is so often is that we'll say, "Oh, we'll forgive them, but I ain't having any more to do with them." And we no more forgave, as I say, as a hill of beans. If we've forgiven, then reconcile. Thirdly, folks, we're not always going to have our way about everything. I've had a hard time learning that. In marriage, do you have it your way every time? If you do, if you're a dictator and running your family that way, I guarantee you're a mess. Your family's a mess. We may not know it, not yet, but sooner or later. In Ephesians 4, verse 1 through 3, "I therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace." Aren't those wonderful words? And aren't they hard to do? But he commands us to endeavor to do it. And what we must remember about that is two vital principles about the kingdom of God is that we're not the king. And that God has brought us together by His blood. And we just said that by the partaking of the Lord's Supper. We said, in effect, as we ate the bread, that passage, if the New King James is translating it correctly, 1 Corinthians 11, that we, being many, are one bread and one body, for we all partake of that one bread. If the New King James is correct in that translation, there's something else we must think about when we're taking the bread. Not just the body. I left the word "just" out one time. Not just the physical body of Christ. But if the passage in 1 Corinthians is correct, we being many are one body and one bread. For we all partake of that one bread. What that means to me is that when I eat the bread that's on the table, I not only think of the body of Jesus on the cross, but what did He die for? He died to make us one. He died to break down all divisions between Gentile and Jew, for instance, when you think about the other passages in the New Testament, to totally break down those walls, and that two people that would never have crossed the barrier to one another. If you're going to become a Jew to a Gentile, you had to completely come to the Jewish side of things. Jews were never going to the Gentile side. But yet churches were made up of both Jew and Gentile in the New Testament. We read about that, and they had difficulties. But if they remembered that Jesus died for them on the cross to make them be one, just as the Father and He were one, as He said in John 17, Then folks, how could we ever think about dividing from one another unless it was over truth, that somebody was trying to change what God says in His Word? Unless it's that, how could we ever divide from each other? It's like saying we rip the body apart. And we're to remember He's the head, He's King, and we are members of that body. And we're all very different. And so there must be a putting up with factor. I believe that's what long suffering means in the New Testament. We must suffer long. In the passage you just read in Ephesians 4, bear with one another in love. We must put up with each other. Because folks, do you ever in your own marriage have to put up with your spouse? Now don't look at Wilma. Look at me. You have to put up with things, don't you? You have to bear long. If you don't, your marriage is going to suffer. Sooner or later, it'll probably divide and rupture. Because you're going to have to put up with some things. And ladies, those of you that asked Wilna about who squeezes the toothpaste in the middle, I think she gave you your answer. Hang in there, no matter what factor. Do you hang in there with your physical family? I've said this before to you, and I'll continue to say to it. When you go to a family reunion, do you ever think, I'm kin to these people? And you look around like going, you know, genetics, you cannot escape. But do you sometimes hang in with people that just simply do not deserve to be hung in there with? That your love for them is so great, and your desire to see them become better, is you will hang in there with them as long as is reasonably by the truth of God possible. Reconciliation does not mean that everybody will agree with me what we call our relationship in God with one another. We must agree on what He commands, on the issues of morality, what we do together in worship. You understand there are things we must agree on, but there is a lot of things the Bible also talks about upon which we may have disagreements. Still, we can hang in there together with each other. And then He said, remember, endeavor to keep the unity of the body. Make every effort to work things out. Somebody comes along and says, well, I tried, but they didn't budge an inch. Well, my answer to that always is try again. And try again. There are always going to be folks. You know, I get here, I'm brand new, and for a while I still have that newness. And I can not know things have happened. And I can approach people in ways that when you're here for a while, and I'll lose that eventually, and I'll be here for a while, and folks will irritate you and get under your skin, and maybe they do something, and maybe they say something, and it just kind of separates you, and you don't have much to do with them. When you're new, you can get around that, because I don't know all of that yet. I just go up to everybody, try to go up to everybody equally. You know what I have to try to do after I've known all of you for a while, and we know about our warts and moles, is I still need to do that. It's a lot easier when you're brand new. It gets a lot tougher the longer you're with people. And that's why folks sometimes break up with one another. We need to forgive. Colossians 3 verse 13, bearing with one another. And if one has a complaint against another, forgiving each other as the Lord has forgiven you, so you also must forgive. Do you ever think about that? That we're about to cover that parable, and that parable is going to talk about the master who forgave an unbelievable debt that could never be repaid by any one single person on the face of this earth. Not even Bloomberg or whatever his name is has that much money to pay off that debt. But yet, he finds a fellow servant who owes him a measly amount, and he throttles him and throws him into prison until he pays that debt. And yet, that's exactly how we are about people. Mark Broyles has done a lot of work along with Ralph Walker in marriage. You know about their seminars that they hold. And we weren't able to get Ralph. We were able to get Mark. And Mark came and did his marriage seminar for us, or preaching. And there's one thing I walked away. You know how sometimes you have one thing you walk away from a sermon with. And that's, if you do that, that's a good thing. If it's something that just, man, drives itself in your heart. And one of the points he made was that marriage teaches you to forgive. And I thought about how God created marriage before he ever created any other relationship between two people. It was marriage, but of course the relationship between a human and God, but between two humans, it was marriage. And when you think about how often you have to forgive in marriage, if you're going to make a marriage be healthy and work well, you think God is teaching us how to work with each other? In 40 years of being married, there have been times that I've given Will every reason to want to walk away from me. Will you be honest? Will you be honest and realize it's true of your marriage too? And we didn't walk away from each other. And we have things I wish we'd never said, and I wish things that we'd never acted, and particularly my part. But we hung in there, and we forgave each other, and we reconciled. And until the day we die, that process will go on, because we love one another. And that must be what characterizes all of us. We need to be that way. And we need to pray. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. Folks, if he says that about brothers and sisters, I mean about enemies, how much more so do you think it's about brothers and sisters? That if I am divided from somebody, I need to bring that person's name before God every time I pray. I need to pray for blessings upon them. I need to pray that we may be better to understand each other, and that if we don't jee-haw, as we say, that we can learn to love each other and act as we ought to toward one another. There's the examples that we've looked at already. It was read to you this morning about Paul and Barnabas. I'll tell you what that story tells me is that we can have sharp disagreements and still have Christ-like relationships. I don't believe Paul went and ever badmouthed Barnabas, or Barnabas ever badmouthed Paul. There may be wrong in the fact that they separated from one another. That has to stand before God. But in Colossians 4:10, I want you to notice later what Paul says. Aristarchus, my fellow prisoner, greet you, and Mark, the cousin of Barnabas, concerning whom you have received instructions, if he comes to you, welcome him. Paul writes that about Mark, who now, in the story that we just read in Acts 15, wanted Mark not to go with him. He wasn't going to have anything to do with him. And then later in 2 Timothy, he says, Luke alone is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, Timothy, for he is very useful to me about ministry. I'm going to tell you, something changed, didn't it? And maybe it changed on Mark's side. For sure, maybe it changed on Paul's side. Some too. Do you ever think about where these books are written in the story of the book of Acts? Colossians is one of the what? Prison epistles. It was written at the end of the book of Acts when he's in prison for the first time in Rome. And he had freedom, remember? The whole Praetorian Guard, we're told in Philippians, heard. They were chained there, and they changed guards out. And so they had heard why Paul was there. But he had some amount of freedom while he awaited. And then we know he was released. He was released at some point. But then later, he was imprisoned the second time. And this time, he will not. That's when he's in the Mamertine prison. I showed some pictures of it a while back. Terrible place, and where he will not walk away alive. He knows it too. He says, the time of my departure is at hand. That's 2 Timothy. So at the end of his, when he's in prison, it's where he's calling for Mark to be brought to him, or commending other people to welcome Mark because he recognizes how useful he could be. Can we change our hearts about somebody? We need to. And time is a great healer of things. You ever notice that? how sharp you may have felt at some point, and yet time can go by and things can be different, and you don't feel as hot maybe as you did once about some matter that happened in the past. Euodia and Syntyche. Philippians 4, verse 2 and 3, I entreat Euodia and I treat Syntyche to agree in the Lord. Yes, I ask you also, true companion, help these women who have labored side by side with me in the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. I wrote the article in the bulletin this morning about that. Conflicts are going to happen in a local church. But the goal is to agree in the Lord, to find that ability to have oneness again. Yes, if a matter's over doctrine, we've got to sit down and look at what the Bible says, and we've got to agree about what the Bible says about something. There are matters in the Bible, as you know, Romans 14, 15, even matters that are matters of opinion that we need to remember, we can disagree on, but that's a study that has to be taken under consideration. We have to realize which issue are we dealing with. We must agree on the things that God has given no leeway to us. We may need, as the passage here teaches, the help of a third party to see our mistake. And true companion, if he's calling it, some people render it as a name that meant true companion. Go help those two ladies. So sometimes in a congregation, folks, we have to be somebody who can intervene between the dispute and bring two people together. Stories told back in when Alexander Campbell was preaching the gospel that two churches had divided. A church. Have you ever done that or thought about it? I've been invited to two feuding churches that divided, members divided from one another, once were one church. I've held meetings at both places. You know what happens when that happens? The second place I go, the first place never asked me again, because I dared to go to the second place. And sometimes, folks, you have no idea what's happened. Sometimes when I move into a place, everybody wants me to take the same position they took about something. Don't ask me to do that, because I don't know if you were right or wrong about what happened in the past. I start now. And what I try to do is preach the lessons that I'm preaching and say, here's the attitude we must have. And sometimes you need a third party. Alexander Campbell came to those churches, happened to be in Ohio. I forgot the place now. And because of the stature he held and the respect that he had, he was able to bring those brethren to reconcile with one another. And they actually joined together, became the church that they had been before. That may be the most important lesson of all the lessons you may hear, is you might need the help of somebody else to see. And then I think about David and Saul, and we studied that lesson long in the Old Testament where I was teaching about the life of David, and you get this out of it. David truly tried, but Saul would not budge an inch. You remember that as we studied. But David never became embittered against Saul. Jonathan, my son, was reading 2 Samuel 1. It was in his Bible reading. He came to me the other day when he got off work in the morning. And he got there about 6:15 or so. And he said, Dad, have you ever been reading? He reads at work at night tonight. He said, have you ever been reading a passage and just, man, it just comes to you and you want to pray? He said, do you ever pray about the Bible? I said, yeah. I said, man, there are times when you're reading something and just at that moment you think, I need to pray about this. And the thing that impressed him about that passage impressed me. David had been chased all over Palestine within an inch of his life. Saul would have killed him if he could have. Many times he tried. Read that chapter if you haven't read it and thought about it this afternoon. And the song of the bow that he sings in praise to Jonathan and Saul when he learns they have died. And there is not one ounce of bitterness towards Saul. The man who tried to kill him, his father-in-law, is nothing but his praise for what he had done for Israel. What a great attitude. If possible, Paul says in Romans 12:18, so far as depends on you, live peaceably with all. And so quickly, And I've made this list for you before. Let me remind you again. Always have a gracious attitude. Do you remember what Paul said in Philippians 1? Some preach the gospel out of envy and strife, our word, thinking that they will add affliction to my chain. But others preach it out of a true and sincere heart. What Paul says in that passage is, I am grateful for both because it doesn't matter if some preach because they're envious of me, because they have strife toward me, or some preach it out of goodwill. I'm thankful the gospel is preached. You don't think preachers fall out with one another? You don't think there's some preachers would not have another preacher come and hold a gospel meeting because they think they're wrong about something? Or maybe their daddy told them they're wrong about something. Or maybe their preacher told them they're wrong about something. It all needs to be sorted out sometimes. But the bottom line is, I want you to think about what Paul's saying. I don't care if some people are envious of me or some are preaching the truth. I'm just grateful they're preaching. Even the side that was envious was preaching the truth, Paul says. And I'm grateful for that. Always be humble. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interest, but also to the interest of others. That word selfish ambition, there's a Greek word that was used of their politicians. That's the definition when you read about it, we'll talk about it. That's a good definition. What politician runs, it's not selfish ambition, basically. They want to be out there and be number one. Maybe they want to accomplish some good things, but the bottom line is, that's how they act. Don't you act that way. In humility, count others better than yourselves. Always listen. Always listen. Do we always hear our spouse correctly? Or our parents if we're children? Or sometimes children need to hear their parents. We need to listen. And we need to control our anger. The anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Barclay says in the work that he did on the word strife, whenever in a church Jesus Christ is dethroned from the central place, all personal relationships go wrong. His name was Montgomery Meigs. He was Quartermaster General of the United States during the Civil War. He was a Georgian. He was a Southerner who remained loyal to the Union, who had been in the Army just like Robert E. Lee and so many others who decided to go fight for their states that had withdrawn and formed the Confederacy. Montgomery Meigs hated the Southern officers who had left their sworn duty to the United States of America. In 1864, all of the cemeteries had filled up in and around Virginia, Alexandria, and all of those places. And so Secretary of State Stanton ordered Montgomery Meigs to find a new place to bury, and he immediately seized the property of Robert E. Lee. We call it Arlington National Cemetery. Did you know that? The house of Robert E. Lee sits prominently upon a hill. The reason they had to seize it immediately is Robert E. Lee made his decision not to serve the Union. Do you know he was the one offered first of all to lead the armies of the United States? And he turned it down to go with his state, to go with his country. They didn't think in terms of the United States. They thought in terms of Virginia. They thought in terms of North Carolina or whatever state they belonged to. That was their country. And immediately they seized it, because if you've ever been up there and you've looked down on the rest of Washington, all the Confederacy would have to do was plant good cannons up there and they could have rained shells down on the White House and everything below. They had to seize it. They passed a law that you had to pay a tax in person to keep your property. That's how much Congress also hated the Southerners. So Robert E. Lee tried to pay it through a relative, but they didn't, and so they seized his property. And immediately Montgomery Meigs started burying soldiers. He said, I will make this place unfit to live, because he hated Robert E. Lee. And he buried his son, who had been killed in the Shenandoah Valley by a sniper earlier that spring. He buried him in Mrs. Lee's rose garden. There were bodies that were buried all the way up to the door. They were later removed. That was Montgomery Meigs. But Robert E. Lee was made of different stuff. When he rode one time in Virginia, when he came home, a lady had a tree in her yard, and it was shot up, shell marked, terrible, wasn't going to grow back. She said to him, his vet, said, "General Lee, I'm going to leave this tree. It's a reminder of what the Yankees did to us." Robert E. Lee told her, "Madam, cut it down and forget it." And that's what he did. If he had said, "Keep fighting," if he had said, "Retreat into the hills and the mountains of Arkansas, the Ozarks, or wherever there were mountains, and keep fighting," there would have been guerrilla warfare. There would have been hatred. There was enough hatred, and it went on for a long time. But there would have been more hatred that would have gone on and on and on. Everywhere he went, he preached, "Reconcile. Forget it. Go on and live your life." And he believed staunchly in God and in the Bible. Whenever in the church Jesus Christ is dethroned from the central place, all personal relationships will go wrong. But when I remember what he paid for me and forgave me, how can I hold something against you and think I will go and stand before him and be accepted? You're subject to heaven's invitation. Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned." And if we can help you come back to him this morning, all together we stand and we sing.